Hello and welcome back to the Talking Rugby Union podcast with the Becketts. I'm Joe Harvey. I'm also joined by Chris Hill. But we're going to get straight back into it because we ended at quite a good point, I think, last time.
Yeah, I think so. It was good, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think so. It's all right.
We're now sharing a mic, yeah. So there'll be a second between the two of us talking.
Yeah, there's been some sort of technical issue in which I thought something was going to blow up. So I thought it was probably safest to cut down on microphones. The microphone
like
just
uni, cut your losses.
Yeah.
The last podcast.
See, if you haven't, go back and listen to it now. You're not allowed to listen to this one until you've listened to the last one.
But we're going to talk now about Charlie's fame on BBC Jersey.
It's not fame. It's right. So you know when you're growing up, everyone, boy or girl, about the age of 8, enjoys wrestling.
I've never watched wrestling.
Right, well, you missed out.
Well, Tuesday nights at our grandma's, we had the cousins over, our family was over, everybody watched the wrestling, then we probably reenacted a little bit of it.
Yeah, all the kids would wrestle. And what happened was, my two sisters and my three cousins all grew out of it. I didn't. So when everyone gets too cool for wrestling, I didn't get too cool. I'm the least cool man in the world. I'm basically a big wrestling fan. We'll tweet about it now and again, all this. We'll tweet about it a lot. And moved to Jersey, and a fella called Jack Murley, really good bloke, who worked for BBC Radio Jersey and was our commentator, did sports team for Jersey, was our commentator for our games, really good at his job, brilliant broadcaster, always has to be a massive wrestling fan. And he came out after one of the games, and he said, I've pitched to BBC Radio Jersey that they let me do a wrestling special. Would you like to come on with me? It's a one-off. We're going to talk about, there was a show coming up, we're going to talk about it. Would you like to do it with me? I was like, absolutely, that sounds like great. From one off, there we go. Anyway, it seemed like people quite enjoyed it somehow. And now I think we've done, I think the one we're going to record this week will be our 8th, I think. He's since moved to Cornwall, so now works for BBC Radio Cornwall. So now it goes out on BBC Radio Cornwall. So we've cracked the mainland. People talk about cracking America. We've cracked Cornwall. And yeah, we just ramble about wrestling for a bit and we have good fun. And I can't believe anyone wants to listen to it. But people seem to. I think we get something like.
I really did try to listen to it, but I would think I got like 10 minutes in on the train home from somewhere, and I was just I don't understand what's going on. It sounds very nerdy from Charlie, and I'm not listening anymore. Sorry.
Yeah, which is absolutely fair enough, and probably what I'd think if I wasn't a wrestling fan. So I don't know why people listen, but they do. I have a great time, and we'll do this one this week over FaceTime. It'll record me chatting about, there's a bit of stuff to chat about at the moment. I won't bore you with it, but there's plenty going on in the wrestling world. There's a lot. We'll have a chat. We send a question out. People interact. And we just have really good fun with it. And like I say, I can sit and talk about wrestling all day. So the fact that anyone wants to talk to me about it is brilliant at the start. The fact that they want to record it and other people want to listen, well, I just have a laugh with it. And it's, like I said, it's ridiculous. People do want to listen, but they do. So we just crack on and get it out there.
And you mentioned your nerdiness. There's a lot of tweets that go out on kind of, well, Sunday evenings / Monday mornings. And then also, there was another thing with Avengers Endgame that came out recently.
But yeah.
The other thing I'm talking about, of course, is Game of Thrones.
So, yeah, so I'm... so you probably just take
Sarah
a seat.
Just
take
her eyes
a, take a seat to the side here. So... Yeah, I have very few redeeming features, actually. I'm just a massive loser. So Marvel superheroes is absolutely I probably like it even more than wrestling, I'd say. It's probably my favourite thing. Do you reckon, S?
Yeah, can I just say, right? So this coffee shop that I go to, the guy in there is like, oh, I'm so excited about like Avengers Endgame coming out. I was like, oh my gosh, I have the perfect person for you to talk to, my brother. And he's like, oh, nobody wants to do it with me. Yeah, so it's all I hear about on the group chat. Guys, I'm so excited. It's coming out. I don't know what's going to happen. This person, I don't know what's going on.
Yeah, so Endgame obviously came out recently. I need to go and see it again this week. I actually need to see it for, I think, my third time. So I need to see that again.
And you need to go and see it.
I do, I need to. There's bits I need to see.
That's 9 hours, by the way.
Yeah, 9 hours I'll have watched for then. And then, yeah, Game of Thrones is the last one. Sunday night. I want to stay up with Dad to watch it. Dad won't stay up, so we're getting up at 9 to watch it in the morning. But that's just, oh, there's so much drama over that. Whether it's good or not, I don't know what I think of it at the moment. Just everything. And then I love Lord of the Rings. I've got into Star Trek recently. I'm such a loser, but it's brilliant.
Just more of a normal person who watches, like, Line of Duty. Have you watched that?
See, I've heard about it. I've not watched it. Have you watched it?
Yeah, mate. I'm
that was drama,
yeah.
Wasn't that it? Was that was drama. That was good. That was good.
I've just started series one, so our mum isn't very into telly, particularly as your mum, you wouldn't say. But genuinely, like, probably one of the biggest tellings off I've had in my life was the fact that I don't watch Line of Duty. Like, she genuinely told me off for it, so I was like, right, okay. So on the ferry back from Jersey, I started watching it and I'm hooked. Yeah. I've just finished the first series last night. It's very, very good. So I reckon I'll rattle that off in my off season actually and get caught up in time. But no, I just love good film and good telly. Like, there's so much going on at the moment. I think it's just, and as professional rugby players, probably we work hard, but probably for like 4 hours a day, and then you've got a lot of time to kill. So a lot of box sets, a lot of films get watched. We're very fortunate.
I've got 3 series into Grey's Anatomy within a week. So
I can't watch that.
Yeah,
it's
quite
very difficult.
Well, I enjoy it. It's quite samey, but it's very dramatic, isn't it? Like, a lot of people come in, there's nothing wrong with them, then bam, dead.
But you're watching it on your phone, which I can't believe.
Yeah, because the TV doesn't have Amazon Prime TV on it, so right. I can't watch it on anything else.
I couldn't do that. If I was really into something, I'd need it on as big a screen as I can get. Yeah. So I can't believe you watch it on your phone. Oh, you're a better person than me then.
Any particular box sets the guys in Jersey really enjoy? Or have enjoyed?
So a lot of us watch Game of Thrones. Yeah. A lot watch that. What's going on? One of the boys has just started something that I've watched called How to Get Away with Murder, which is really good. Boys are rewatching. So one of the lads is rewatching Breaking Bad, which is just excellent. A lot of boys watch Line of Duty. We all, as a squad, most of us watched Bodyguard when it came out on BBC in winter. Mm. There was a lot of us. We had like 10 of us watch the last episode together. And then a lot of films just go around as random films on Boys Go Through Stage. So we watched over 3 nights in our house. We watched the Dark Knight trilogy just back to back. We watched Lord of the Rings over a weekend, things like that. So a lot gets watched. But there's nothing I'd say at the moment. Game of Thrones obviously got everyone, but there's nothing that's got gripped everyone at the moment apart from that. So that'd be interesting to see how they finish that up on Sunday.
Yeah, and in the England team, because you guys probably have a fair bit of downtime too.
So when the Madeleine McCann documentary came out, that was big news across the squad. That was a lot of dinner times and lunch times talking about what we think happened. I think it's more like Netflix series. So there's a lot of girls who have watched something and then another group gets into it and you sort of watch it together. So watching Madeleine McCann was me, Zoe Harris and Jess Breach. We all watched that together. We sort of didn't separate for that time. We were together all the time. Line of Duty was a big one. SAS Who Dares Wins. We had good conversations about that. Richard Blaze loves that. Loves it. Wants to talk about it all the time.
He'll be happy listening back to this podcast. He's been absolutely raving reviews for me about.
I do hope he will be listening.
I'll tell him he has to.
All the England squad and coaches will be. This will be probably get this played at your next camp, just at dinner, just this played.
Just in San Diego.
Just this played right, on the bus. Get this on the bus to the airport.
So, guys, usually we have a sing song, but today we're going to listen to the Beckett's podcast.
Today you're going to listen to Sarah's brother be an absolute idiot. Is what you're going to listen to.
Yeah, well, we had that in the room in, were we in Doncaster or Exeter? Yeah. Charlie rang me and I was in a room with the girls and an hour later he's still on the phone but not talking to me, he's talking to the girls about all sorts.
So I rang S just to ask something, I can't remember what, and Zoe Harris answered the phone. And so when S made her debut, so one of the girls, Elle Perry, her boyfriend is Alex Seville, who plays at Gloucester, I've played with, and I know Elle really well. So we're in the post-match function, and I've seen the back of a head of who I think is Elle Perry, who I know really well. So I've just grabbed her by the ponytail and like shook her head, like I am to Essie. No, just give her a shake. This girl's turned around. It's not Elle Perry, it's Zoe Harrison, who I've never met in my life. I know who she is, though. I was like, Zoe, I'm so sorry. I'm Charlie. I'm so sorry. She goes, I know who you are. And walked off. I was like, oh, God. Anyway, so I ring Essie up on FaceTime, and Zoe answers the phone. I was like, hello, Zoe, you right? She's gone, Es just in the bathroom. I've gone, oh, okay, so sit there in silence. But Es,
how's things?
Yeah, Es comes back out, ask us the question. Anyway, as I said, an hour later, I'm now, yeah, Zoe weighs in with her opinion on something. Jess Breach joins in, and honestly, if you want any gossip from the England women's side, come to me, because I know it all now. After that hour, I know everything. If you want anything for a small fee, I'll tell you all the comings and goings of the England women's side. But no, it's very funny.
Now outdated by about 3 months, so probably wouldn't.
Still could be gold, though.
There was no gold.
You mentioned before, Zara, about like you know, sing songs and stuff like that. And yeah. I think Katie Daly McLean was on the BBC pod, and she said after the Grand Slam win, normally you do it. Is it if you don't score a try?
Yeah,
you sing. But
no, usually if you score a try, you have to sing. So Jess Breach gets annoyed every week. She hates doing it, and she scores a lot. So every week we're like, Jess, you're gonna have to get your song run. She's like, I don't want to do it. Throws a fit. Proper diva. No, she's all right, really, but...
Slating everyone today, aren't you?
No, she's all right, really, but... Yeah, so usually if you do score a try, you have to sing. We decided that after the Scotland game, if you didn't score a try, you had to sing. So, yeah, a couple of the girls got caught off guard there, so it's sort of off the cuff.
Bit of relief for you, then?
Yeah, lovely. Lovely. I sort of... After the game, your mind sort of goes to, oh, my God, I'm going to have to sing on the bus. I need to get a great track because you get booed, you get heckled. That's one of the things
you're thinking about during a Grand Slam game. Yes, I don't need to sing on the bus.
No, not during the game, but definitely after the game. It's like, yes, okay, don't have to sing on the bus or do have to sing on the bus or a nightmare. So, yeah, I was getting ready for that and they go up and everybody who doesn't score and I'm thinking, yes, don't have to sing. Nobody wants to hear me sing, so, yeah.
I think just being a rugby player, though, professional or amateur, I think it's so key that you have a song in your locker because any initiation, anywhere, you have to sing a song. And any bus journey, long bus journey, songs are brought. So I think, and like you say, with your contract, you have to have more than one because the worst thing is just sitting with you on your song, you're ready to go, and someone else gets up and sings your song. So it's just so key that you've got to have a number of songs that, boom, you can just rattle out at any point.
On ours as well, it's pretty savage. So if they don't like your song choice, they boo you off.
You have to go. I was going to say, do you have to go again?
So like,
or do you
I
just
was singing Love Story by Taylor Swift, which, by the way, is a classic. I can't believe that I got booed off. No, it's not going to happen. I see what you're trying to do there, but it's not going to happen. Got booed off. And obviously, because I play at Waterloo, their favourite thing to do is sing ABBA, Waterloo, back
nice,
to me.
Yeah, nice.
I don't know the words to it, so it's a bit awkward, really, but I guess I should probably learn the words.
What are the key songs in the Beckett libraries?
So for me, I've got a few. I've got... oh, no, I thought I'd turn the mic off. I've got Wheatus, Teenage Dirtbag. I've got Smash Mouth All-Star. And then probably my third is Ronan Keating, You Say It Best. When you say nothing at all. That gets the boys going. Bit of a ballad for the lads. Ballad for lads. They love it. But yeah, and then I'm working on Kenny Rogers, The Gambler. Getting that as well. So what I do when I'm sending new songs, I just play it on repeat in my car whenever I drive anywhere. After a while, I've got the lyrics, but they're mine. What do you go for?
So I go for... It's hard on our bus because there's quite a big like age divide. So like the younger songs, the younger girls love them. Like everyone's going crazy. But the older girls, who are the ones who usually boo you off, don't really know them. So you get booed off. So my first cap song was Boyfriend by Justin Bieber. Anything that's like old school Justin Bieber, love it. Yeah. Sung like a couple of old throwbacks. Goes down really well. I haven't personally sung these, but goes down really well is like Spice Girls. They love the Spice Girls. Anything that's just like a classic, Angels by Robbie Williams, anything like that really, you know, just like classic songs.
I think having songs that people can sing along to, someone that the chorus, most people are going to know the words is key, but genuinely nothing in rugby disgusts me more than when someone gets up to sing their song, gets their phone out and reads the lyrics. No. If you don't know the lyrics, get out. Anyone can read lyrics. You've got to know the lyrics to be able to properly sing, because if you don't get your emotion through, what are you doing? Yeah. So no, if you get lyrics out, you will get booed off and battered. Really? On our bus. Physically battered.
Not the same.
Booed off and battered. No lyrics. Do you need the lyrics?
Not for the ones that I know really well, but if like the ones that I don't know, yeah.
Why would you sing one you don't know, though?
Because if you don't... I don't know the ones that go down well. So to not get booed, I need the lyrics.
I have known you for 20 years. I've known you your whole life. And I can quite honestly say I've never been more disappointed in you in my life than now that you use lyrics at the front of a bus. I don't even know you anymore. I don't even know you. You've ruined our family. Yeah, talking of reunion. Talking of reunion breaks up families is what we're getting to here.
What is the best rendition of a song by a certain player that you've ever had the...
Okay. This is a tough one. There's been some great ones. But Rory Bartle at Jersey with me, Welsh lad. Mm-hmm. His great voice on him. Genuinely a great voice.
Welsh.
His Delilah by Tom Jones. is wow. unbelievable. It's excellent. Like, that's probably the one that when we've had a few drinks and or we're singing, there's songs in demand, that's what everyone wants to hear. Everyone's like, come on, Bart. And he's very good at not giving it away. He's some boys, as soon as they've had half a pint, I'll just be singing a song. Me, I'll be singing my song, whatever, whatever point I can. Bart's will make you work for it. And then when it comes on, it, well, when he sings it, it's absolute belt. So he's the best I've seen.
Lark Davies got a really good voice. She does a good Adele. So whenever Lark has to get up, you have to go, Lark, Adele, Adele. And there's cheers down the bus going, Adele. She sings anything else, she gets booed. So oh. She's pretty stuck on Adele at the moment. Here you go. So Tyche Harper plays at Waterloo and me plays England under 20s. She made a wrap up. But me, her, and I think Rihanna Manson, we wrote a rap for her under 20s first cap. And I can honestly, I've got that video on my phone, honestly say that went down an absolute storm. It was about all the staff on the tour, all the players on the tour. It was brilliant. Yeah, that's probably the best one I've seen actually, Tyche Harper on under 20s tour.
And we alluded to before, Grand Slam celebrations.
Yeah.
How long did they carry on for? Because as I understand, the Saracens women's one went on for a while.
Oh, yeah. I've heard that one went on for a while. We had a good night after, and then we had recovery protocols at sort of 9 o'clock. So we were up on the Watt bikes having a great time.
So literally not like the Saracens boys have had, where Alex Coode's been bowling around
his
full kit.
We were staying at a hotel like an hour away from Twickenham. So it was a late kickoff, wasn't it? So by the time we were leaving Twickenham, it was like 12:30. So we only got back about 2-ish. Then we had court till about 4. And then
I like the fact you still do court at the top of the game.
And then some girls went to bed. Some girls stayed up. I went to bed. I was tired. And then we were up, obviously, for Watt bike and recovery protocols or pool, if you had it, or whatever it was. And then we got released from camp about 12. And then I think we all met up, the players met up in Clapham, sort of like 4-ish that evening. And we had a good night. And then that was it, really.
Because a friend of the TRU, Nick Heath, did he join you on, was it the night out? Or
I don't think
was it another... Was it someone's birthday or something?
Oh, that was Mo Hunt's birthday, that thing. She had a that big, big party down in somewhere.
Lovely. Absolutely lovely.
Just grassing his mate up here, being wasted.
And more on a more serious rugby note, I mean, how special was that sort of journey from the start of Six Nations to the end of Six Nations for you? Because we've talked about it before, Sarah, that the sort of 5 months from November to March this year was a whirlwind for you, and it may have seemed like that during the Six Nations.
Yeah, it was absolutely crazy. So I got my first cap for under 20s the day I turned 19, so that was February in 2018, and then got my first cap for seniors in the autumn in November. So I was like, what's that, 9 months maybe? Yeah, so that was pretty quick. And then I was sort of fortunate in the fact that other girls had picked up some injuries, so sort of got a chance at the start of Six Nations and played. So I'd been injured from the autumns, played a few 40s for Waterloo, felt okay, was playing all right. So got the start in Ireland, and Blaise left me on for 80 minutes. I don't quite know how I hung on, but I hung on. I was tired that day, and I played pretty well. Obviously got brought up in review for things and things you can learn on, but I was pretty happy with the way I played. And then players came back from injury, so I was on the bench against France, and I came on and did a all right job, I think, in that game. Did my job when I came on. And then next week against Wales, I got start. And I'm at six. So when we played for when we played against Ireland, I was playing at six. And the team sheet came out, and I went to Blaise, and I was like, Blaise, I've never played here before. Like, he was like, it's fine, just go and do what you do. Like, you've got this. It's not really that different. Just play how you play, and you'll be fine. So yeah, played against Wales, and that's probably the best I've played. Like, happy with that performance. I said to my mum, actually, like, when she asked me, like, how was the game, I was like, do you know what, before the game I just felt like this was going to be a good day. Do you ever have that, when you just feel like it's going to be a good day?
Yeah, it's weird, isn't it? Like, sometimes just, I think it's before games, also in a warm-up, you can feel, I think probably less from a personal point of view, but from a team point of view, I think I can definitely feel like in warm-ups it's like there's a real buzz about it here, feeling good. But then sometimes some of the best forms I've been in teams are some of the worst warm-ups. Like, you can just drop everything and then go on the pitch and just start. I think probably less so like before a game, but in the first 5 minutes, I know I can feel like, okay, I'm going to have a decent game today, actually. Like, For me, it's getting involved early and having a good first involvement settles me into the game. If I feel I'm chasing it, if I haven't done it for the first 5 minutes, I start chasing and I do something stupid, and then that's when I struggle sometimes.
Yeah, no, for me, I just felt like I did nothing differently. Nothing was different when the way I prepared, but I just felt like that was the day I was going to have a good game. I had a good first involvement, which is important, and then had a pretty decent game, so I was happy with that game. Then retained the shirt for the Italy game, which was pretty cool because at that point it was sort of like the first point where I felt like I'd properly earned it. Like, everybody was fit and I was chosen because I was doing the best job at that point in time, which was pretty special for me. So when that came through, I was really, really happy that time.
Player of the match against Italy as well?
Yeah, I did. I don't quite know how that happened. I only played 50 minutes. But I guess it was a good 50 minutes. Yeah, that was pretty special, and the crowd there was absolutely unbelievable.
What was it again? Was it like 50?
No, it was like 10 and a half, 11, right. I think. So there was a pretty packed Sandy Park, and the noise that came out of them was great. And I think RFU did a really good job of moving the game around, and actually you could see the appetite for the game, and people who can't always get to London, if we're playing in London, get the chance to see it and sort of think, oh, women's rugby is actually a pretty good game, actually, and it's good to see. And then obviously Grand Slam against Scotland, was able to start again, which was pretty special.
And had a good early involvement in that one, didn't you?
Yeah, thanks Poppy Cleo for the great setup. sliding in at Twickenham, that was pretty cool. That was a great day.
Were you at Twickenham, Charlie?
Twickenham was the one I made it to. We had a week off that week from the championship, so that was how I ended my week. I only made it to the Grand Slam winning one. So that was a really, really great day, that one. And it was great to see. I think in years gone by, obviously Twickenham looked pretty empty because it's an 80,000 seat stadium, and years gone by, I think it's completely empty. There's like 1,000 or 2,000 left. So the fact they had 13,000 there that day, and they broke the record 2 weeks in a row for the most people watching a women's game of rugby, was absolutely brilliant. I was really, really pleased with that. And yeah, I think it was a shame that the game was so one-sided. But that's the way it goes. Some points happens in men's rugby as well. You get very one-sided games at times, and it was a really good game to watch. From an English point of view, we had a great day, and brilliant for you girls to get the win. I was really excited, and then wangled my way into the post-match hospitality.
Oh, very nice.
So we only get two wristbands or whatever it is for the family and friends room after. Somehow my whole family was in that room. I don't know what you did to get in there.
Found the back entrance. Slipped in. Everyone else had these blue wristbands on. They were like, I went up to get a drink. They're like, have you got your wristband, sir? I fell off. Oh, and they were going, but you showed it to get in the room. I was like, yeah, of course I showed it to get in the room. Yeah. Cool. Oh yeah, how would I get in? My blue was like, oh, okay, here's a drink. I was like, get in. And then the food was brilliant as well. I was buzzing. I was like, oh, fajitas. How good's a fajita? So yeah, so we wangled our way in.
And of course, I think I'm personally hoping for another breaking of that record for the Barbars game against a pretty stacked Barbarians team.
Yeah, unbelievable. They've got people from everywhere, haven't they? Yeah. A couple of Kiwis in there. The Welsh girls are in there. There's Australians and everywhere. They're from everywhere. A couple of our girls who have now retired, who I never got to play with, but I think it'll be a bit weird for some of the girls who have got a few more caps than me to be playing against girls who last year they were lining up with, which will be pretty surreal for them. But I think it'll be a really good game, really competitive.
Yeah, and looking further ahead now, Charlie, for you, what would you say a summary of Jersey season was? Because, you know, it's Championship is such a relentless league, and it's a really tough league to be one of those top teams. So would you feel like Jersey are definitely on that pathway, do you think?
Yeah, I think it's been a weird season. So it's strange to think that we've had, in the club's 140-year history, this year was our best ever league finish ever. Fourth in the Championship, the highest ever been. But we're probably disappointed with how we ended. So I think we started the season with 3 losses, which genuinely couldn't have gone any worse. And then we went on a really good run. We went on 10 undefeated. We beat London Irish until Yorkshire. We're the only team to beat London Irish in probably the best game I've been involved in. I've never had a thrill. Like, we scored in the 84th minute to win. That was unbelievable. And it was at Christmas. It looked like we could be in for a bit of a title run with Ealing and Irish. And then we went and lost to Ealing last league game before Christmas, which kind of then separated them as a top two and us as third and fourth at Bedford. Pirates around about then as well. So then we wanted to finish third. This season's already at Christmas. We're like, we've got a real good chance to finish third here. And then we had a weird thing, the fact that when the big teams came, the perceived big teams, we played well. So we beat Irish at our place. We beat Bedford. And then we lost to Irish away. We lost to Ealing twice, which was disappointing in the league. But we lost to Irish away. It's a tough place to go. But it was things like we lost to Hartbury at home. We lost to Nottingham away and Coventry at home to finish the season. Like, that cost us finishing third. So overall, I think at the start of the season, if someone had been offered fourth, they would have taken it, because the highest league finish we ever had. During the season, we should have finished third, really. We let it slip with some poor performances from us. But what's exciting is we've kept the majority of our squad this year, especially of what has been our starting 15 majority of the time. We've only lost maybe two or three players. So the fact that we can now build on that, because in years gone by, like I said earlier, with so many players going up to Premiership Pro 14, they basically have to do a complete rebuilding phase. So probably why we don't win the first three games of the season. We're getting used to playing with each other well. The majority of our side has had a season together now. The coaching staff, there's a new coach staff this year with Ed coming in. We've had a season together. We can really build, hopefully, now and have a real good shot at that top three, hopefully, this season coming up.
Yeah, Joe won't thank me for saying this, but obviously you'll be playing Newcastle next season. Looking forward to a bit of a visit to Kingston Park.
Yeah, I think you want to play against the best, don't you? So I play. The fact that Newcastle side has come down, you look at the players you've got, that shows how strong competitive the Premiership is. It'd be interesting to see in the next few weeks who they keep. I'm sure there'll be news of boys leaving Newcastle in the next few weeks. You hear murmurs, don't you? But I'm sure that'll be confirmed in the next few weeks. But even if they lose five or six players, they're still going to have a hell of a side in the Championship next season. But you look at the way Ealing have recruited as well. Ealing are going to have an incredible team. We've got some stupidly talented players. So Bedford always have a great side. And it's like you allude to, it's such a attritional league. It's week in, week out. You do not stop. And you go to some tough places to play. So you go down to Penzance and you play Pirates down there, that's a tough place to go and play. You go to Lady Bay on a Friday night in Nottingham, that's not an easy place to play. Butts Park for Coventry, that's not an easy place to play. Ealing's obviously tough to go to. Kingston Park next year, it'll be very tough. It's cold, wet, windy up there on a Friday night. So there's lots of tough places to go. I like to think Jersey isn't an easy place for teams to come. So it's a real attritional league, and I think you saw the fact that Irish didn't run away with it until they beat Ealing last game of the season, where they got their bigger lead. I think it'll be a tighter league than some think next year, and I think it's going to be interesting to see how it goes, especially the fact you'll get a random result of, like, when Coventry beat Ealing this year Nottingham beat Ealing this year out of nowhere. You'll just get everyone is capable of beating everyone in the league. I think as well, with Ampthill coming up, Ampthill's going to be a really tough place to go, because it's very, so you get, it's obviously the merge of amateur and professional being the champ. So you go to places like Kingston Park, Ealing, to the Majeski. Very, very professional. You come to places like us, it's a bit more traditional rugby club, but it's turned professional. Right. I've never been to Ampthill Rugby Club, but I hear that it's...
I've been there.
I need to be as respectful as I can here to Ampthill Rugby Club, but I've heard it's a tough place to go. But I heard that you get changed and then you have to walk 500 metres to a forest, to the pitch.
So you turn up and it's like a standard sort of clubhouse, and it's you know, all the old shirts and who's played on us, and then get changed and then you walk out and you've got to walk through like, it's like a wood. You walk through like a wood, and then the pitch is just there at the back of the club. It's a very surreal experience.
They will turn teams over there, I have no doubt, just because boys won't want to go and play there. So it's going to be a very interesting league next season, and it will be, I think the Championship is a great league, and I think it could do with more exposure, because I think some of the rugby that gets played is excellent. It's not the old slog that it used to be anymore from a rugby point of view. You see a lot of talented young players who play some great rugby down there, and I think the more exposure it gets, the better. And I'm very, very passionate about the fact that I think, not just because I'm a Championship player, but I think that ring fencing the Premiership would be a terrible idea.
I'm 100% in agreement.
I think what? But then on the flip side, I was on loan at London Welsh from Gloucester when London Welsh went bust. I was there, and you don't want to see that, because I was watching boys who I was mates with who have families suddenly found out they got no job, and a great club go out of business almost. It wasn't for their amateur side, they'd be done. So I think you've got to protect Championship sides who do well from that as well. So you hear rumours of what might happen. For me, what makes sense is that the bottom of the Prem, the top of the Champ, play off at the end of the season over two legs, and whoever wins stays or goes up to the Premiership. That would make sense to me. It would stop teams who aren't ready going up, because if you can't beat bottom of the Premiership with two legs, you probably shouldn't be in the Premiership. But also, imagine if we'd had no relegation this year. Imagine that Leicester Newcastle game was one of the most tense.
That Jack Noll tweeted, didn't he?
And best games I've seen. Yeah. Imagine if that had just been a dead rubber. Like, I think the sport would lose so much. You see it in the Pro 14 and the Super and Super Rugby. There's no relegation. So after halfway point of the season, half the teams are playing for nothing. So I just think, I very strongly think that ring fence would be a bad idea.
We could literally talk about that for another 45 minutes to an hour. Because, I mean, Amtel would be the same. They've been competing in National One this year, and this is where I get my National League keen head on. But they played, I think it was Old Alfemians, and both of them are going for the title. And it's like, if you take that away from them, then...
Yeah, well, two of our lads from Jersey went on loan to Old Alfemians. So Adam Batt and Cam Hollenstein went on loan there. So I knew all about that, and that was massive. We were watching the results, and obviously... Amtel gave a bit of a kicking in the end, actually, in that game. I think about 33-6 or something. But you look at... so you've got Old Elts trying to come up next year from there. You've got Richmond, who are going down, who are a very good side. Chinner have made some really big signings. They're going for promotion. So you kill that, and then suddenly that's not there. So I just think ring fence in general is a bad idea. I think you lose a lot of the competitiveness in the league.
Jersey, of course, famously got the try of the season.
I famously wasn't on the pitch at that point.
I remember seeing the pictures.
I was celebrating in my big subcoat.
Augustine Slowick, another former interviewee from Talking Rugby Union. I interviewed him at start of this season.
Yeah, I remember. Yeah. I remember reading it. Very good piece, has to be said.
Thank you. I think it was worth 50 quid. No, it wasn't. it's all in the past now. So Jersey play a very exciting brand of rugby, I'd say. Kind of keep the ball in play as much as possible.
Yeah, so I think historically we probably haven't done that. I think we've been based around set piece, massively scrum, line out, maul. I think we still pride ourselves on having a good scrum, and definitely me personally, like, I'm massive on my maul. Like, I get hurt when we concede maul tries and I want us to score. I'd happily not give the ball to the backs. I'd just kick the corner and maul it all day. I wouldn't get bored of mauling. But people would get bored of watching it. I think a lot of that is both the recruitment this last season, Ed Robinson coming in as a coach. Ed's a brilliant young coach who wants to play rugby. And I think Harvey, as DOR, has enabled him to do that as well. We want to play rugby. We want to score tries. We're very keen on playing in the right areas. So you probably... I'm going to contradict ourselves. We scored that try from behind our own posts in the dead ball area. That was not by plan. That try was not... We didn't go, this is what we're going to do here, lads.
We're going to put so much pressure on us, but we're going to score at the end of
it. We're very big on playing in the right areas. But once we get into your half over the 10-minute line, then we're going to just play. And we're happy to play for 5, 6, 7 minutes straight if we can, because we back our skills, back ourselves to play. And some of the backs we've got, both this season and we've signed for next season, are unbelievable. Like Oggy, like you just spoke about, put the ball in his hands and things happen. Leroy Van Dam on the wing. This last season, Cock Marks has been unbelievable. We've signed Tom Williams from the Blues. You look at James Newey, Brett Herring this last season, Will Homer at scrum half. We had Callum Waters on loan from Quinns for some of the season. And I'm doing a disservice to the boys I haven't mentioned, but these boys, you give them the ball and some space and things happen. So it's a pleasure to watch, either if I'm not playing or on the pitch. I can't keep up, so I end up watching when they run. They're brilliant players who I have no doubt could do it, whether they're playing the Premiership, Pro 14, wherever they played, they'd be doing this. And that's what I mean about, there's brilliant players and brilliant rugby players in the Championship. There's only so many spots in Premiership squads, so more and more players are coming down to the champ. You're seeing better and better rugby and better tries being scored.
Yeah, and that expansive sort of style you mentioned there, Charlie, is probably related to the England team as well. Definitely joining the Six Nations, so that must be really exciting for you, Sarah, going into this tournament in America in the next sort of few weeks, to be part of this England side that just seems to be relentless in the attacking sense of the game.
Yeah, I think, like Charlie just said, we look to play in the right areas as well, so we know we've got a talented squad. And I think a big thing for us has been being able to adapt. So if going round you's not working, we'll go through you, we'll go over you, we'll kick the ball, we'll run it into you, we'll pick and go. Like, being able to change what we're doing, and I think that's a big thing that we're working on, being able to recognise when something's not working and being able to change that. And I think that's sort of where we're finding our success at the moment, being able to recognise within ourselves, actually, this isn't working. That's big credit to the leadership group that we've got within the squad, and big credit to the coaches who let us have a bit of the responsibility to be able to say, actually, that's not working, and this might have been our game plan, but today it's not working. So we've got the confidence, and the confidence from the coaches within us to be able to change what we're doing.
Yeah, sorry, go on, Charlie.
But you say about you playing the right areas. If I was, as a forward, I would love to be on the same side as Emily Scarrett, because she might be one of the best kickers of rugby ball, both male or female, I've ever seen. Like, I remember being at Twickenham, and she's kicked the ball from 22 to 22. I'm going, I haven't played with anyone who can do that. It's unbelievable the way she strikes a ball.
I think for us as well, we're in a really great position. It's a unique position that we've got so many kickers. So actually, when that squad who was playing in the last game, you've got Katie, I think it was Mo at 9, wasn't it, who can obviously box kick and is a great scrum half. Katie at 10, who's one of the best 10s in the world. Then you've got Zoe Harrison at 12, who is by trade a 10, but is playing centre and is being more of a ball player there, who's also a great kicker. And then you've got Skaz at 13, who, again, as you've seen in the game, can just absolutely leather the ball, but while she's leathering it, put it in the right areas, which is, it's so good for us to have, because it just is a massive pressure release.
And you can kick.
Yeah.
So, S, if you scroll back far enough on her Instagram, you should probably delete after this. There was a video of her, was it under 15, 16? Under 18, sorry, with a chip and chase try. And it's one of the least natural chip and chase you'll ever see. She kicks it with a straight leg, her leg straight as she strikes the ball.
Funny story. So, that one I didn't actually score, but I think it was my second ever game in the Premiership, and we were playing Harlequins at Harlequins. So, massive game. Yeah, and I think it's the most tired I've ever felt on a rugby pitch, as in, like, I could run and it looked like I'd be walking. I was so tired. I think we had like a 5-on-1 and I had no energy, so guess what I did, Char? Kicked it.
Are we seeing that in San Diego when you guys
No, definitely not.
In front of a Sky Sports camera as well?
No, not at all. Can you imagine if I did that? I wouldn't go back on the team. I wouldn't go back into the dressing room. And yeah, I wouldn't. Yeah, I don't think there'd be any point in me going back. But I think we got great forwards as well. Great forwards who we're getting our set piece down. We know that's an area that we're working on. But we're so mobile as a pack as well. I think that's what we see. So the likes of Sarah Byrne, great athlete, Vicky Cornbury, who's just relentless. I don't think she gets enough credit for the work that she does. She's just an absolute animal. Shauna Brown, who comes on or starts and just makes a massive impact. And she's a player I particularly like linking up with, because I think we run off each other really well. And then I don't think there's a player in our pack that is just, they can scrummage, they can lift in the line, they can jump in the line out, they play rugby, and our set piece is good as well. So I think we're just in a really fortunate position.
And in terms of the tournament in America, obviously you're coming up against the best teams in the world. Yeah. So how good is it that England can have these competitive fixtures so early on, and what is this next new bit of development for you guys?
Yeah, it's great, because there's a lot of new blood in the squad, as in there's a lot of us who maybe not on double figures caps or just into that double figures caps, who haven't had the opportunity to play the absolute best in the world, who are New Zealand, and they're going to be out there in San Diego. And as much as like the other fixtures are going to be competitive fixtures, well, New Zealand's probably the one that we're all like, this is a big game now. So I think it's going to be great to get that experience in, and the more we can play more competitive sides, the better we're going to get. And for us, that's really important, and be able to challenge ourselves and get the best rugby that we can out of ourselves.
Right. I think we've reached the conclusion of,
I think they've had enough of us.
Doubleheader podcast.
This is us getting kicked out. Can I say quick? So I think, so I said at the start of our first podcast, like how I've just become Sarah Beckett's brother. I can pinpoint the moment that happened for you.
Go on.
So I went to watch her. I thought I'd try and tell us. I thought you'd enjoy this, because S gets embarrassed by this. So I went to watch her play for Waterloo against Saracens at Allianz Park. So I was still at Gloucester, so last season. And I've gone to get a coffee, because I probably hadn't had one for 10 minutes. I need to fuel my caffeine addiction. And I'm standing in the queue, and this guy turned round and looked at me and turned back round and then looks again and like looks at me a third time. And I was like, he knows who I am. I was like, here we go. I've gone, he's obviously a keen Gloucester A-League fan. I've gone, he knows who I am. Like, he pumped up my ego a little bit. I was like, here we go, look at this, I've got a fan here. He turns around and he goes, you Charlie? I've gone, yeah. And he goes, oh, you're Sarah's brother. And I went, sorry? He goes, yeah, Sarah Beckett's brother. I'm Scott Beaman, I'm the England's backs coach. I've gone, hi, Scott. I went back and Dad was like, what's up? I've gone, I've just been called Sarah's brother. He goes, what do you mean? Gone, a guy's gone turned around to me and gone, are you Sarah's brother? And it started, and since then it's...
Just random though, it was Scott Beaman who's England's backs coach, so he probably does have a bigger interest in women's rugby.
Since then it's never changed. I'm just everywhere. It's Sarah Beckett and her brother Charlie. It's Sarah Beckett and her brother Charlie who that's what it is. And you said you got your first 20s cap and 9 months later you got your first England cap. I got my first 20s cap 4.5 years ago. Eddie, if you're listening, I'm still waiting.
Well, we're going to bring an end to this podcast with Sarah Beckett and her brother Charlie. We'd like to thank everyone very much for listening, and I'm sure you'll hear us next time.